Everybody, in my opinion, has something to offer. And if you listen to people's stories and you're smart about how you think about what they did and what they're saying and ask the right questions, usually, you can pull something out for yourself, you know, learn something from that.
So yeah, I just drop everything I have in my pack and just go as light as possible. I go all the way over there, come around on this rock bluff, like above where I last lost them. And I just peek over the edge because it's a pretty big drop. I think I killed him around, you know, 250 yards or something. So it's a big drop. And I'm just looking over it with my binos, and I pick him up within 5 minutes, bedded underneath a single baby pine tree. All it took was the effort. Once I got there, he was literally laying right there, right underneath where I was at.
I'm a big proponent of making things happen. There's a time and a place for the, you know, obviously to be patient and let things unfold and watch, you know, but then I feel like a lot of people get hung up on that, mm-hmm. and then the window of opportunity closes.
It's pretty much, where are you seeing deer? I'm like, not e-scouting, not any of that shit, actually being in the field. Where are you seeing deer? What does it look like on the map? And where can you replicate that in the unit, like at multiple spots? And then I will scout like 5 trips preseason, and just, I'll pick like one new type of terrain to go look and see if there's deer living in it. And mm-hmm. then I'll pick like 3 or 4 of the same type of terrain that I've been hunting, because I already know deer live in it. I just need to see if there is a deer living there. You are not going to get good at this unless you do it a bunch.
Yeah.
Like, you just have to do it a bunch. So I pretty much plan all my vacation, all my free time, anything around just trying to get efficient at it.
Welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Couple things before we jump into this episode. Please, you heard me say a million times, go give us a review on iTunes. Helps me keep this podcast free and helps with the ratings. Also, go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. If you use our promo code John Stallone, all one word, you save 20% off on anything. And it's not just shooting bags. They do glassing pads. They're working on some other really cool stuff coming up here for the hunter, bow hunters also. So go check them out, phoenixshootingbags.com. And if you're looking for a really good hunt, I have some really good opportunities for you. Hit us up on daysinthewild.com. Or check out my blog, johnstallone.me, and send us an email. If you're looking to do a coos deer hunt, javelina, mule deer in South Dakota. We got some opportunities in California as well. So give me a call if you're looking to do something different this year and like to get on a special hunt. Days in the Wild Outfitters, and we'll take care of you. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode. We went in specifically to find a buck that a friend of ours had found early in the archery season. He was scouting for his rifle hunt, and he didn't have his bow, found a deer, actually ran into another one of his buddies back there, put this friend on the deer. They never got it with the bow, busted it out, whatever. So he told, he's like best friends with my lead guide, Shane. And he told Shane about the buck and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, month and a half goes by. Nobody went in there to kill the buck. And Shane kept tabs on it and went in there a couple times and, you know, found them. And mm-hmm. so we went in there and we killed this buck. He's 195 and 5/8.
Damn.
I say we. He took him. And the day that I went with him, we could not turn him up. We found a smaller buck, like a 150 buck, which would have been awesome. He was an 11-year-old kid, you know.
We
felt like we had a good chance at finding.
So, how close did he end up killing that buck? You know, when you guys couldn't turn him up, was he still just right in there?
He was about 600 yards down the draw from the last place we saw him.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
It's kind of cool learning about, like, where they move and how often they move and shit like that.
Yeah.
That's what I've been focusing on.
Yeah.
Also,
I honestly, I did a lot of that stuff when I was whitetail hunting, you know, patterning, using trail cameras and watching and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then when it came to mule deer hunting, like, I don't know why I didn't really. I mean, I did it early on. I patterned it. I did a lot of stand hunting and stuff like that early on when I first moved to Arizona, 1991. Okay.
And then when I got to spot and stalk, I stopped doing that. I stopped kind of like paying, not, I shouldn't say paying attention, because I always pay attention. It's just, I just didn't put as much emphasis on the whole patterning of a specific deer, mainly because I got burnt so many times where like I put all this work and man, I got a couple target bucks patterned and then opening day hits and everything goes to shit.
Like, dude, I am almost at the same exact point as you.
Yeah, so.
Like, it's just, I've done it twice now where I found good bucks and then they're just not there. Like, you literally watch people walk right by them.
I was counting the inches. I was honestly counting the inches in the back of my truck so many times because I've had them so dialed in and.
Yep.
And then, you know, where they're at. It's crazy too because our season, like our early season, I don't do this for obviously for rut because it's, you know, it's a different ball game. But in the early season, you know, like I said, I'd have all this information. I'd have trail cameras, tree stands set up. I'd have, you know, glassing spots, whatever, everything just ready to go. Mm-hmm. But our season starts, it's like right when like the holiday weekends for the summer holiday weekends are hitting. So then like all this influx of traffic, even non-hunting pressure comes in there and it just disrupts what they're doing. And
right, exactly.
You know, I mean, if you have the time to put in and figure out where they go and what they do when that pressure comes, then yeah, you're still in the game, but you spent all this time.
Even then, they tighten up so much. Even if you have a general area where they go, mm-hmm. it's still tough.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. So we're doing a couple podcasts here with listeners of the show, not to sound like demeaning or whatever, but the average Joe guys, you know, guys that are not celebrity hunters or well known in circles, but everybody, in my opinion, has something to offer. And if you listen to people's stories and you're smart about how you think about what they did and what they're saying, and ask the right questions, usually you can pull something out for yourself, you know, learn something from that. So this is one of those. And we have Steve, what's your last name? I don't even know.
Last name is Evans.
Evans. Steve Evans. Steve Evans is going to share with us today. Why don't you give a little rundown about yourself and then we'll jump into it.
Yeah, Steve Evans. I live here in California. I've been here my whole life. I've hunted my whole life, but I started big game hunting in 2019, actually. And I killed my first buck in Montana, and then it was all downhill from there, or uphill, however you want to look at it. And yeah, so then pretty much I just got addicted to big game hunting. And it's been cool, dude. I've loved it, like everything. I archery hunt, rifle hunt, high country, desert. I just go all over the place hunting as much as I can.
Awesome.
Now, yeah.
So you were gonna share with us what about a buck that was it an area that what was that? I'm trying to remember because I had like 25 people hit me up yesterday. You had found them like early on, and then you found them in the same area like 4 months later, and ended up killing them. Is that what it was?
Yeah. So it was a 30-inch buck here in California, public land, just mm-hmm. like a general unit. I didn't really plan on killing a 30-inch buck probably ever. I think that's like kind of a pretty high progression as far as I was concerned, right? So, yeah, I'd actually found a good buck in 2019 on this like brushy hillside during archery season. So mm-hmm. that kind of prefaces what happened last year in 2020 was I was in there in July trying to find the same buck. Mm-hmm. And, I just turned up this buck. I thought it was the same buck, honestly, because to see two deer of that caliber up here isn't very common. So the whole time I'm hunting this deer, I'm thinking it's the same deer from 2019.
Right.
But I find him in July, and I glass him up, actually standing up out of his bed. He was bedded between this pine tree and like a rock cliff, which I see very often. Like they bed at the bottom of rock cliffs, so they only have to look one direction. Mm-hmm. And smell from one direction, really. So I turn him up, coming out of his bed. I was just looking at the video. It was July 9th. And basically, he's like 22 inches wide at this point with just knots on the end of his horns.
Okay.
So
lots of growing tough.
Yeah. So it was really early, but I mean, I could tell he's going to be growing. So I had actually already had all my trail cameras out in old spots, right? Just to see what was going on there. Mm-hmm. So I turned this buck up and I can only watch him for like 5 minutes, but I literally know exactly where he's living, or at least one of the spots he's living.
Mm-hmm.
So I drop off the mountain. I make a 6-hour round trip hike to grab one trail camera that I had up there. And then I came back in the following day and set that trail camera like 100 yards from his bed, which was, I know that this is dicey getting in there like that.
Yeah, but are you planning on hunting him in July still? Like, because no, you said this is California, you said, right?
Yeah, so archery season opens mid-August.
Oh, that's right. You're B-zone, okay.
And then rifle season opens late September.
Okay.
So I actually, where he was living, I didn't actually plan on archery hunting him, period, which is a little, because I do archery hunt. But, you know, big-ass deer on a super steep hillside that you can only glass from a mile and a half away.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, the thermals and stuff were always good over there. It's just, the only shot I had was from the bluff above him, which would be like 100 yards. It was a steep, rocky bluff. Or I'd actually have to come in along his same bench,
mm-hmm.
which just doesn't sound like a very good plan to me. So I had zero intentions of hunting this deer with a bow.
I like those big rocky bluffs. I like those big long shots downhill because I'm not the sneakiest of guys. And that usually lets me get to where I need to be to get a clear shot. And I just rely on my shooting ability at that point.
Yeah.
But that's true, awesome.
This was a deep shot. Like, I mean, it would have been like 100 ranged yards. So an even further shot, right? Because I went up there, like I took the bluff above him when I set this trail camera and I just creeped down in there to make sure that he wasn't in his bed,
mm-hmm.
which he wasn't. So that worked out. But I have pictures. I was standing in his bed in July. And I know that's not the greatest idea, but I'm like, dude, it's July. Either, you know, he should still come back. And I wanted to get a feel for the area, how I would kill him, if it was going to be with a bow or a rifle, that kind of stuff, right? So I needed to really get in there tight just to look at it. So, yeah, I make that big round trip, grab a trail camera, and go in there, and I set it. Once I get in there, there's actually a spring about like 150 yards from his bed, and it's on a little bench, right? So I set it on the bench, facing his bed so I could get him coming. There was like a few travel routes. I put it where like three things were. There was a spring, a travel route down into his bed, and he could feed anywhere in there too if need be. So yeah, I basically watched him grow into a 30 3/8 inch buck. He didn't come back for a month and a half after I put that trail camera there.
Jesus.
Yeah. But when he came back, I was like, yeah, that's him. So yeah, I just watched him grow. And then this is throughout August, and I mean, like, I'm archery hunting just different deer in a different area,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just totally leaving that buck alone.
Right.
So then I went to Alaska, caribou hunting, came back, got my trail cam pictures. He's still there, and now he's hardhorn, and now it's like mid-September, right? So I'm like licking my chops, right? So he's still living right in there somewhere. I'll get him on camera once a week or something like that. So opening of rifle, I actually had another good buck that I had found that was living right above a trail. This buck was living, and nobody was killing this deer. I was not even worried about that. But the other big buck I found was living right above a trail. So I actually put my effort into that buck opening weekend because I figured if anything, the only time I'll be able to kill him is opener, and then he's going to get blown out. So I didn't end up finding that other big buck, and I didn't hunt the 30-inch buck opening weekend. Okay. So kind of weird, but the other buck was still legit and in a more killable spot, and just it was worth my effort to chase the other buck opening weekend.
Gotcha. Now, so, I got a quick question for you. It's your trail camera pictures. Are you checking them with cell phone, or is it you have to actually go physically go get your
cell card?
Okay.
Cell phone.
10-4.
Yep. Yeah. Which, dude, they're legit, but I just don't even know how much more I'm going to run them. As I've passed like 100 spots that were badass that you can't set them because there's no service.
Yeah,
because
no service.
You kind of end up forced into, in his case, I got lucky. But in a lot of them, you kind of just end up forced into putting them in certain spots. So yeah, that's another tangent,
it was curious because it was, you know, it was the first thing that came up to my brain is that he didn't come in there for a month after you were there. And then, you know, if you had to go in there again to keep checking the trail camera, then, you know, you might possibly be totally, bumping him again. Look, so, okay, but that makes perfect sense. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I wasn't having to keep going back in there, or I would have definitely not set that camera in there. So it was a one-time deal. Basically, I didn't even blow him out, but I know my scent did. Yeah, he didn't come back for a month and a half in there, which is pretty wild.
Yeah.
So I don't chase him opening weekend. I chase another deer and end up killing a small buck because I have zero self-control.
Well, so, you've only been hunting for a couple of years, man. You should be killing small bucks, you know what I'm saying?
Right. So I get this buck, and then so where this buck's living is a super steep slope, and you can only glass it from about a mile and a half away. And it's a west facing, so you can only see before the sun comes up. Once the sun comes up, you're screwed for a few hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like trying to piece all this together in my head. Like, how am I going to get this buck killed? So I decide that my best bet is to actually sleep on top of the mountain that he is on.
Okay.
And then every day, I had like 5 days worth of food with me. Every day at 10 o'clock, when the thermals are pretty much dialed in, mm-hmm. I was going to sneak down. It's like 1,000 feet. He was like mid-mountain. I would sneak down 1,000 feet and check his bed and try to kill him in his bed.
Okay.
So that was my plan. Or the only other option is across the canyon, and it's 2,000 feet down, freaking 2,000 feet up. And that's if he stays there in the 4 hours it takes you to get there.
Right.
You know? So I'm like, that's going to be my only option, really, is to sleep on top, wait till midday, and just sneak down and just try to hunt him like I know he's living there, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
like I was like, in 5 days, he should be back in those beds at some point. So anyways, the very first day, so I pack in Friday night, and I literally, on a lateral line, I hike like 500 yards past his bed, and I hike straight up the mountain 1,000 feet higher than where he's living.
Okay.
Right? So Friday night, I'm up there, and my other plan was, I'm just going to glass for other deer in the morning, right? I'm not going to sit in my tent and wait till 10 o'clock. Like, I'm still just going to glass for deer up here. And so that was the very first day I hiked in, Friday night. Saturday morning, I am up 1,000 feet higher than where this deer was living and a mile away from where he was living. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm up there glassing on these rocks. The sun hadn't even came up yet. And I spot this big ass frame because it's still early, right? Spot this big ass frame in this little avalanche chute it was like 6:50 in the morning, right? And mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know what that buck is, but he's huge. And so I got my rifle set up, totally dialed in. He was pretty far. He was 630 yards. Mm. At this time, I don't even know that it is my buck, right? Mm-hmm. I just know he's huge. And so I lay out, hammer this buck. I'm calling everybody, and like my dad and another good buddy, they're like, is it the buck that you're after? I'm like, it can't be, dude. I'm a mile away and 1,000 feet higher on this mountain, right? Like, I didn't really know that they will have multiple homes and travel that far, especially because I got them on camera 3 days prior, right? So they do some moving. And so sure enough, I get over there. It's the buck that I came up there to kill, 30 inches. I looked like a hero, like I patterned him and did all this shit, and I ended up killing him borderline by accident. You know, like, I was up there to kill him, but not in the spot that I killed him in.
Right.
So, yeah, it was cool. But, yeah, I mean, like, just I learned so much stuff. Just if you're not hunting the alpine, when they get hard-horned, they don't just drop down 2,000 feet on the mountain because their horns are hard.
Right.
Like, if they're already somewhat in the timber, they're going to just stay there. And in this buck's case, I killed him 1,000 feet higher than where I had all the pictures and glassed him up.
That's awesome.
And that was October 2nd.
Now, you shot another big ass buck that you sent me a picture of.
Yeah.
What's the deal behind that one?
That one was, I guess luck. I didn't have any patterning or anything on that, right? That was actually a brand new area I'd never stepped foot in. That was That was the second weekend of rifle also. So like October 5th, sometime around there. But yeah, so that was 2019. That's the first year I hunted. I hunted California. I killed them on like day 17 or something like that. Mm. Total, not in a row, but I had hunted California for that many days. And I dropped down just to a new area, new glassing spot, new everything. I actually hiked in at night in the dark. And he was deep. I don't even know, 6 or 7 miles or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm glassing and I glass up this red doe. She's still got her red coat on, right? Mm-hmm. And she's far. She's like 2,000 yards. And I only have 10s at the time, which I've hunted quite a bit more since then. And that's a long ass spot with 10s.
Yeah.
And so I pick up this doe and I'm like, okay, that's cool. So a thing that I do all the time, I still do it all the time, is if I see a deer, I'll pan away from it. And then 10 minutes goes by. I don't care if it's a doe or a fawn or whatever. I'll pan back over there and see how long it takes me to pick them back up.
Mm-hmm.
Just to train my eyes, you know?
Right.
So that's what I was doing. In this case, I see a doe, no big deal. Watch her for a little bit, pan around some more, go back up there. She's looking up the mountain a little bit, and I'm like looking to see what she's looking at, and pretty soon this fawn like pops out of some brush, and I was like, oh, that's cool, you know. So I'm just watching them together. Well, they walk right up the mountain like 20-30 yards right by that big ass buck that is up there feeding in the shade with his gray coat on. Nice. I would not have seen this deer, but once I'm like solely focusing right there,
right.
So, yeah, so he was like 2,000 yards away as the crow flies and across an entire canyon. And it was like 7:45 in the morning, right? So I'm like, he starts making his way along this bench. Dude, I don't know shit, mind you, at this point. This is like the second deer I've ever killed, mm-hmm. right? But I just listened to enough podcasts, and so I'm trying to piece things together. And he makes his way along this bench, and he goes like by this patch of pines, and I'm like, dude, it's almost 8 o'clock. Like, he's got to be wanting to bed mm-hmm. in there somewhere, you know. So same thing. I totally lose him. I text my dad and my buddy, and I'm like, hey dude, I found a big ass buck. I'm just gonna go see if I can turn him up. I don't have anything else to do. And I was like, I'll let you know, in 2 or 3 hours. And so yeah, I just drop everything I have in my pack and just go as light as possible. I go all the way over there, come around on this rock bluff, like above where I last lost him. And I just peek over the edge because it's a pretty big drop. I think I killed him around, you know, 250 yards or something. So it's a big drop. And I'm just looking over it with my binos, and I pick him up within 5 minutes, bedded underneath a single baby pine tree.
Nice.
All it took was the effort. Yeah. Like, once I got there, he was literally laying right there, right underneath where I was at. And, I shot him in his bed. So that was just, awesome. That was where I actually learned that, you know, you can kind of make stuff happen. It doesn't just have to happen like right in front of you all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know? And yeah, if you, and I've turned up so many bucks in their beds after that. And even followed bucks over a ridge, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, dude, you can turn them up, and pretty often actually.
I'm a big proponent of making things happen. There's a time and a place for the, you know, obviously to be patient and let things unfold and watch, you know, but then I feel like a lot of people get hung up on that mm-hmm. and then the window of opportunity closes. And like, I can think of many, many times where, you know, me and a buddy were talking and he was like, no, we should wait. Let's just watch and see where they go bed. And then I'm like, no, I'm like, let's go now. We got a rifle in our hands. Let's go do this. Let's make it happen. Because we can get there fast enough. We can make a shot, you know, that kind of stuff. But that being said, I'm also not a big buck hunter. I'm also not a big buck killer. So, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. There's something to be said about the whole patience thing too.
True. Yeah.
You know,
I'm working on it, but I'm not either. You know, I had big plans, but
I'm curious. So a guy that just started hunting a couple of years ago, I want to hear what your philosophy is, so to speak, what your approach is to choosing the areas that you're choosing, because obviously without knowing it, I mean, yeah, we could say it was luck, but luck is one time, but it sounds right. Like you killed a few things already. and two really giant bucks for California. Those, I mean, I'll put those pictures up with this post when I post this episode. But you obviously have an instinct for something, let's see if we could pull it out of you and figure out what it is.
What I think, for one, I had a really good buddy that he didn't give me too much, but he gave me enough, right?
Right.
About kind of where to focus my efforts, which it's changed quite a bit since what he's told me, but that it helped to get you out in the field looking for yourself if you actually have a starting point, right?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
After that, though, it's pretty much, where are you seeing deer? So this is, I'm like, not e-scouting, not any of that shit, actually being in the field. Where are you seeing deer? What does it look like on the map? And where can you replicate that in the unit, like at multiple spots? And then I will scout like five trips preseason, and just I'll pick like one new type of terrain to go look and see if there's deer living in it. And mm-hmm. then I'll pick like three or four of the same type of terrain that I've been hunting, because I already know deer live in it. I just need to see if there is a deer living there specifically.
Right. Exactly.
And then like for out of state and stuff, I do just a ton of e-scouting. I hunt all quite a bit out of state, and I do a bunch of e-scouting, and just what I look for the most is vantages. I glass a ton. So vantages with just broken features, timber patches, open patches, rocks, just stuff like that. And then once you get your eyes on it, you can kind of hone in a little bit better. But yeah, most of the stuff I find is from actually finding deer living in it and then just trying to replicate it. It's not really e-scouting too much.
No. Oh, that's a great philosophy. Definitely something I've implemented myself for many, many years. It makes perfect sense. You know, if you got the right kind of cover, feed, travel corridors, terrain features, water, blah, 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 and you find deer in there, and you find that same mixture of components somewhere else, there should be deer in there as well.
Yeah, definitely. And like once you find them in a spot, then you can e-scout. Like you can literally pull that spot up on the map, e-scouting, and try to replicate it. Or just you're out there and you can see for, you know, 4 miles off your glassing spot, and you're like, okay, that looks really similar over there. I do that. I do both, you know.
I do both.
But I move around a ton. Like I'll plan like a 3-day scouting trip, and I won't camp in the same spot for a single night. Like you're scouting, you know, like I glass the morning and the evening, and I move midday, or the evening and the morning, and then I move midday to a new spot, you know, a few miles. And just the scouting and actually seeing deer with your own eyes helps a bunch. Than somebody saying like, yeah, just go look where you see this kind of brush, you know, that kind of shit. If you actually see that brush with your own eyes and then see what it looks like on a map, you can pinpoint it a lot easier also.
One last question for you. So what made you decide this late in life just to come go ahead and pick up hunting? What drew you to it?
So like I said, I've always hunted, but
Oh, you're
yes.
bird hunter?
Yep, exactly. Okay. So I pretty much only waterfowl hunted, right? Okay. Since I was like 18, just chased ducks and geese all over the place. But I was talking to my buddy. We were bullshitting. We're both pipe welders over here. So we're just bullshitting one day at lunch. And I was like, dude, I need a hard hobby. Like I'm freaking bored, you know, half the year when there's not something to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, dude, you should try archery hunting. And because I already hunted, he's like, I think you'll like it. So he actually took me on an archery elk hunt. And
oh, nice.
It was super fun, dude. I mean, we
tough
we
fun got, to get broken got, in on.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, and it was a good one too. He packed my ass way back in there, and but like I like fitness, I like challenges, dude. It literally just meshed so good, and I like hunting, so that was cool. That was like my entrance, and then we didn't kill anything, but we found plenty, and then I killed that first buck, and I kind of just knew that this is what I was going to focus all my effort on. And I didn't really know anything. It's even more like intriguing and addicting now that I'm like learning more about deer.
You'll keep
not
learning.
Just hunting. Yep. Yeah, not just hunting, but
I've been doing this since I'm 5. I'm 45 now. So 40 years, and I've been bow hunting for about 30. And I don't know, man. Never gets old. I feel like I'm constantly learning stuff.
Oh yeah, like I killed my first archery buck this year, which was cool. That was here in California. So that was cool because I've been archery hunting them for, I guess, you know, 2.5 years now. And then, yeah, so that finally came together. Yeah, I don't know, dude. I just spent a bunch of time in the field and eventually things work out. Like,
nice.
I feel like that's probably the most important part, period. Just time in the field over really anything.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. You guys used to ask me all the time, like, you know, actually my buddy who's from California, he put it together, like put it really well. We were doing a podcast some years ago and he was talking about, you know, the fact that like guys like, oh, I've been hunting for 20 years, but he's been hunting for 20 years. He goes out, you know, takes 5 days a year, 7 days a year, 10 days a year and goes. And then you got a guy that's hunting, you know, 40 days, 90 days a year, you know, and that's that much more experience, you know?
Yeah. That, there's a huge difference. Yeah. So I, 2019 and 2020, I hunted like roughly over 100 days, both of those years.
Yep.
And it was just, I mean, like the learning curve was steep, but I mean, you can learn a lot.
Oh yeah. 100 days in the field is the equivalent of the average person's hunting 7 years, you know? It's like,
yeah.
Like that's,
well, that's what I learned. Like I realized it super fast. I'm like, you are not going to get good at this unless you do it a bunch.
Yeah.
Like you just have to do it a bunch. So I pretty much plan all my vacation, all my free time, anything around just trying to get efficient at it. So now I feel fairly efficient. Now I kind of want to start challenging myself to kill bigger bucks, which didn't work worth a shit this year so far. Well, I'm done in California, but I found all these big bucks and then I killed a 3x3 with my bow and a big fork and horn with my rifle. So I'm still working on
They're not
on
all going to be 30-inch bucks, bro.
Yeah, I'm still working on the trigger control aspect of it, but I can find them. You know, it just takes it's another level of patience and dedication to kill them.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, I have an Idaho coming up and third season Colorado, and I've told everybody around me that I'm not killing one unless I'll put it on the wall. So
sweet,
I got enough meat and everything. So I'd like to hold myself to it. I figured if I tell more people, then
yeah, we got to hold you accountable.
Yeah.
You just said it to about 5,000 people now, so now you're done.
Well, that's what's happening, dude. I'm gonna eat tag soup.
Yeah.
Awesome. Or hope. Well, I mean, I plan on killing big bucks. Like I know that I can do it. It's just a matter of not killing medium ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
That was my problem for. I mean, it still is my problem. I have a really hard time talking myself out of shooting stuff that. Because if it makes me happy, like I mean, small stuff. No, I don't have a problem shooting little guys. But if I see a medium. I gotta talk myself off the ledge every time.
Yeah, I mean, me too. It's like I mean, I hunted Montana last year, and I passed up probably like $15.
Yeah.
But it's the last hunt of the season. There's deer all over the place. Here in California, dude, if you see a deer, you get pretty juiced. And then, I killed that fork and horn, dude. I was in there. I had big plans of slamming a big buck. I knew about several big bucks. And now I finally got my rifle, which I like both. I like rifle and archery.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, I just love them equally. So I got my rifle. I'm like, dude, I'm coming out of here with a giant. No ifs, ands, or buts. And the morning of day two, I glass up this. I mean, he's a good fork and horn. He wasn't like a little dinker. But I glassed him up. Feeding right below me, literally like straight below my glassing rock. I shot him on like a 50 degree angle, and I don't know, I'm a situational killer is what it is.
There you go.
I'd like to say I'm a big buck hunter, but I'm not. If the situation does it for me, I can't resist.
Nice. Well, awesome, man. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your experience with us. It was really cool. I wish you the best on the rest of your hunts for this season.
Thanks, dude. I appreciate
it. I'll keep tabs on you and make sure you don't come out with a dink.
And, yeah, please do.
Although I'm going to put you on blast on Instagram.
I expect it. If I can't stay true to my word, I expect it.
There you go.
But no, I got it. I'll be patient. I got a buddy going with me on both of them, so I can talk them into shooting the buck that I might shoot.
There you go.
That'll work better for me.
Absolutely. Oh, cool. All right, man.
Cool, man. It's good talking to you, John.
Likewise. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, dude. Sounds good.
All right, bye.
Later.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out daysinthewild.com and be sure to give us a review on iTunes. Thank you, and we'll check you out on the next episode.